Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. It's Sunday, October 11th, 2009. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode number 7. I've got some unique stories for you today. One concerns a startup company with a somewhat different mission. And then we've got some stories from Microsoft, some disturbing news from the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, and a story that takes the phrase, "Yes, dear," to a whole new level. I didn't know where to place this story exactly, but it concerns a startup company with a rather unique mission. Ginkgo, G-I-N-G-K-O, is a new startup venture. The founders concentrate on synthesizing genetic pathways from small pieces of genetic material. For instance, previous companies have just synthesized a whole DNA strand from the beginning. Ginkgo's goal is to synthesize the same DNA strand by putting together preformed pieces of genetic material. One of the founders stated that they had this goal because they wanted to change synthesizing DNA from something that's a craft to something with actual standards to make it A, cheaper to do, and B, possibly easier to do, since there will hopefully be a method to the madness. Ginkgo is trying to make that process cheaper, but some computer companies are trying to make Windows 7 more expensive. Some purchasers of computers, recent purchasers I should say, have been promised by the computer companies to receive free upgrades of the next version of Windows. Well, they might be technically free, but certain of these companies are adding very hefty processing fees just to ship people the software disk, in some cases as high as $17. I'm not sure which companies they are, but if you have purchased a PC and were promised an upgrade to the next version of Windows for free, you might want to check out your company's policy for shipping to make sure you are not getting any extra shipping charges tacked on. I don't have very good segues for this episode, but shifting from something that people are supposed to get free, such as Windows 7 upgrades in some cases, to something people might want to get free from now on, ebooks. There is a concern in the book industry that ebooks might be quote-unquote Napsterized. In other words, as ebook readers are becoming more and more prevalent, you're getting more and more of a choice, you are going to see, potentially, more pirated ebooks out there for the taking. Especially because there are now all these file sharing sites like RapidShare, Mega Upload, and others that people can post these books on, and other people, when made aware of them, can go and grab them for free, potentially. So the book industry is concerned, naturally, that it will go the way of the music industry, which had the same problem several years ago when Napster and other similar sharing services began distributing pirated copies of music. The Association of American Publishers estimates that book sales have gone down within the past year or two in general. They are not unaware of the piracy that is going on and are even aware that it may be increasing. It's also difficult to quantify the problem. It's similar to the problem the music industry had. They're aware that a lot of people are uploading things, but not sure of how many people are actually downloading the free uploads and pirating the copies of the books. So since this piracy takes place on specific sites, the American Association of Publishers, along with some others, have started monitoring them. The way these sites often work, people upload a file onto the site, they are given a URL to share with others, and other people, when they click on this URL, can download the file for free. No passwords protect these files, in general. Some of these sites, such as RapidShare, have responded to publishers' takedown requests. However, it can sometimes be difficult to respond to all of these because a publisher has to have a URL to request to be taken down, since these sites do not monitor, in general, what files are placed on their servers. So even if they take down a file, the publisher gives them a URL and they have the file taken down, they cannot guarantee that it will not be re-uploaded by someone else in the future. I should point out that these sites do not exist solely for piracy, and indeed it really wasn't the reason that they were created in the first place. All of them pretty much maintain in their FAQs that they were created so that people could upload their personal files onto their servers and keep them there if they did not have enough space on their hard drive or they wanted to back up their files. So even though that was their original purpose, it has become very easy for people to use them for piracy instead of just backing up their own files for their own purposes. I don't know of a solution. Book industry will have to find a solution to the problem. I have no idea what that solution should be. I should point out that people may be pirating books to read on e-readers, but people also may be pirating books to read on PCs. One of Microsoft's chief executives said that Microsoft makes the best e-reader in the world, and that would be the PC. You can laugh at this all you want, but a lot of us blind people who cannot use regular hardware e-readers do read e-books on the PC. The same chief executive at Microsoft said he would love to see companies like Amazon and Barnes & Noble bring their books to the PC. Microsoft does have an e-reader. It is called Microsoft Reader, and it has its own special format. So he probably means that he would like to see these companies partner with Microsoft and provide books in Microsoft's special software reading format. Microsoft's e-reader, by the way, is inaccessible to blind users. I don't believe they have taken steps to remedy this. We do read books on the PC unless we have a specialized device such as the Victor Reader Stream or the BookSense that has both voice guidance and text-to-speech output. I'm not sure, though, how many people would actually prefer e-readers if they could access them over PCs. I imagine that the level would probably be kind of high. PCs in general, unless you're talking about a netbook, are not very portable, and e-readers have that advantage. Switching from book publishing to publishing on the web, the Federal Trade Commission announced this week that it is attempting to regulate blogs for the first time. Prominent users of Facebook and Twitter, as well as other blogging sites and other sites dedicated to the reviews of products, are going to have to disclose for the very first time the fact that they are paid by these companies to give such reviews. People who are paid by certain companies to review their products are going to have to disclose the fact that they received money for this. Now, the Federal Trade Commission does not specify whether it's talking about the average consumer or whether it's talking about actual businesses, companies, and other professionals who may review products online. But as a consumer, if I wrote a review on my blog and was given money, however small, money or something free into the bargain, I would probably disclose it just to be on the safe side. Switching from the FTC report to other legal news, lawyers for Viacom, working on its $1 billion lawsuit against Google's YouTube, may have found something that works in their favor. They say that they found emails and other evidence that suggest that YouTube employees themselves were among those who uploaded unauthorized content to YouTube's servers. In addition, they stated that other internal YouTube emails among management and other employees indicate that management was aware of the unauthorized content existing and chose not to remove it. These emails were found when an exchange of information between the parties in the lawsuit occurred, and they are one of the cornerstones in the case being built by Viacom, as well as another lawsuit filed against Google's YouTube by some other content providers. This could be a real smoking gun to YouTube's case. It could potentially be very detrimental, in other words. If managers at YouTube were aware of this content and did not remove it, then YouTube will not be able to seek protection under the Digital Media Copyright Act. They won't be able to seek the safe harbor protection item in that act to protect themselves from liability for this. This DMCA provision, as I just said, was designed in 1998 to give content providers a measure of protection and to decrease their liability in certain cases. Not only is Viacom skeptical that YouTube didn't know about this, but other members of the entertainment industry are also skeptical of YouTube's claims that it had no knowledge of this material on its websites. YouTube is maintaining that the evidence that Viacom is using against it was obtained in an exchange of information, that Viacom is correct about that, but it only makes up a small amount of the evidence obtained. Employees of YouTube also state that Viacom itself authorized uploading of such content to YouTube, so that not only is YouTube management guilty of letting this content remain on the site, but Viacom is guilty of uploading such content in the first place. So, this case might not be as one-sided as it first appeared. We'll have to see what happens. I acknowledge this next story, it has to do with entertainment as well, but it is quite weird. A company is remaking the Star Wars movie A New Hope, which, as some of you might know, is the first Star Wars movie. I guess people can't come up with ideas for movies anymore. But it's taking a rather novel approach to the idea. It is allowing Star Wars fans to create scenes of their own, create 15-second clips, and send them in, and if they are deemed acceptable, they will be included in the movie. I'm not sure exactly how this is going to go down. I think that's what they're doing. I've read a few stories on this, and really I'm not clear on what the actual process is, whether these scenes are supposed to act as previews and trailers for the movie, or whether they're actually going to be put together and become the movie. Hopefully there will be some more information coming up that will clarify the situation. I'll switch gears and talk about our product of the week here before getting to our last story. I do not have an event of the week to discuss this week. This product is called the Perfect Solutions Talking Lucky Lottery Number Picker. There are 5 buttons on the unit, one for each category of the lottery. One for pick 3, one for pick 4, one for Powerball, one for Mega Millions, and one for Hot Lotto. And depending on which one you want to play, you press a button and it'll give you the random numbers for each category. If any of you win the lottery by this, I want my cut since I introduced it to you. The last story takes the phrase "yes, dear" to a whole new level. The director of the FBI, Robert Mueller, almost fell for an online phishing scam when doing some online banking, and his wife has officially banned him from doing any online banking whatsoever. He got an email from what he thought was his bank asking for some rather personal information. He was about to respond to it, and he was almost a few clicks away from completing the form when he realized that he might not want to do this unless he verified with his bank that they had actually sent it. So he did not send it. He changed all of his passwords, and when he was honest enough to tell his wife about it, he tried to pass it off as a teaching moment, but she was having none of that. She banned him from any online banking as a result of this. Since he is interested in preventing cybercrime, I'd like to think that he is going to obey her demands in this regard. This ends our 7th episode. Thanks for listening. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com, or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.